From Hollywood, NBC brings you Hedda Hopper. Hedda Hopper, who daily reports to 30 million readers in America and 8 foreign countries, now reports to you on the air. Here is Hedda Hopper's Hollywood, from the desk by the window, looking right down on Hollywood and Vine. And here she is, Hedda Hopper.
Hello, everybody. It's Saturday night and time for you to look over my shoulder while I write my column about famous people here in Hollywood and elsewhere. And time to visit with Colleen Townsend, Shelley Winters, and Pamela, and James Mason. Okay, let's go. Mrs. Everett Crosby will sing the latest Oscar Strauss operetta in Paris this spring, titled Her First Waltz, which he wrote when he was 81 years of age. Howard Hughes is having the famous play Rain set to music for Jane Russell. Can't you just hear her as Sadie Thompson singing to Reverend Davidson about the hills of Nebraska? Everybody's betting that Audie Murphy's next bride will be Pamela Archer, an airline hostess from Dallas, Texas. She's the first girl Audie's shown any interest in since his divorce from Wanda Hendricks. I couldn't check with Charlie Chaplin, since our association is distinctly unfriendly, but I hear they're expecting another baby. Betty Hutton will spend 4 months in Sarasota, Florida, working in the biggest show on earth. And when Ringling Brothers Circus opens in Madison Square Garden next spring, she'll be with them as one of their stars. Gene Autry, the busiest man in town, hasn't enough to do, so he's turned producer to make 6 westerns starring not himself, but an ex-stuntman. The Walter Brennans celebrate 30 years of marriage by taking a slow freight to South America. The London press is in a tizzy because Gene Simmons let Hollywood scoop them on her engagement to Stuart Granger. You've all read about Colleen Townsend, the young actress who gave up a promising movie career in favor of church work. People want to know why, so I asked Colleen over to explain why she did it.
It's really very simple, Hannah. You see, it comes down to this. It's what's most important to a person. For 3 years now, I've been doing both movie work and helping over at the First Presbyterian Church here in Hollywood. I've been studying and teaching with young people's groups, and last summer I went to Europe to work in a refugee camp with other members of our church. I've learned that being a Christian isn't only something I want to be, but something I want to work at actively. Working in movies is exciting, and I've loved it. But what I've done in the church, and what I hope to do in the future, well, Hedda, is 10 times more exciting to me. And no, Hedda, I'm not going to become a preacher, but I am going to marry one. And we think that working together, we can help people find Christ. And, well, in these times, there's no other life more important or more thrilling for us. So you see, it's really very simple, and it's just how I feel in my heart.
Thanks, Colleen, and I'm certain you'll be very happy. You know, faith is a very rare commodity these days. I'm proud to know a beautiful young lady who's using her talent to bring it to more people. Anne Blythe doesn't know it, but Mario Lanza is going to invite her to sing with him on his coming concert tour. Jean Tierney will be in Puerto Rico for the premiere of Cyrano de Bergerac. She'll be the guest of Jose Ferreira. Gloria Swanson read Park Levy's December Bride, but the author convinced her the story wasn't for her. So he'd write her another comedy, which he did, titled it My Next Picture. And the day before she hopped off for England, she called him collect. He was paged off a fishing boat. And the first thing that Gloria said was, I don't think my love scene is strong enough. Dick Mature phoned to say, I'm off canes and crutches, but I'm still limping. And guess what? My dog Genius evidently got jealous of all the fuss I was getting, went out and got hit by an automobile, and now he's limping just like his old man. 2 weeks ago, Humphrey Bogart argued with me about an actor's responsibility to his public and made the crack that if there were any budding nonconformists in Hollywood like Shelley Winters, he didn't want to do anything to stop her or keep her quiet. Well, I thought at the time that Bogey was leading with Shelley Winters' chin, and I disagreed. If there's one thing a brilliant young actress needs to be careful about, it's saying startling things or blowing up whenever she feels like it. In short, letting people think that she's the most temperamental bombshell in town.
For me, Hannah, no!
Shelley Winters!
Here I am. I walked right in.
in, but Hannah, no. Those things you said.
Patsy, bring her a chair.
Coming right in, Miss Hopper. Never mind, thanks. I can't sit still anyway.
You're going to have a little talk, darling.
I've heard about this office. You get invited down here, and it's a wonderful chance to talk back to a columnist. But you're putting me in an office.
Shelley, you're not afraid to talk back to anybody, are you?
Now, don't misunderstand. I think this is wonderful. Actors always have to read somebody else's lines. This is a rare opportunity. But those things about me being temperamental and such a nonconformist and... Hannah, is that what people really think about me?
What do you think?
Well, imagine.
Now, let's not be coy.
Hannah, I don't see anything in the world wrong with the reputation I've got, though. I'm not quite sure how I got it. Really, I'm just a girl who...
Wait a minute. How you got it? Shelley, aren't you the girl who said that her favorite time-off activity is hunting eligible bachelors?
Well, why not? Maybe it's a little exaggerated, but it's not such a bad idea for a single girl, is it?
No, but another thing. You met a producer the other night at dinner, a producer that you might like to work for sometime. So what did you do? When everybody else was praising his new picture, you up and told him it was awful.
It was. You know, I get invited to more nice houses once that way. But just because he was a producer, I wasn't going to...
I know. You do things on impulse. In public sometimes, too. Remember we had a little session once before about the impression you created in New York when you walked down the aisles of matinee of Kiss Me Kate, wearing a white sweater that grabbed everyone's eyes away from the stage. Yes, I was there. I heard people say, there goes Hollywood. They said...
Ted, it was an accident. I'd just gotten off the plane. I wasn't trying to attract attention. Really, I wasn't. Besides, it was a yellow sweater.
Oh. It was?
I've never done anything like that for publicity, if that's what you mean.
No, it isn't. But that's not good publicity. What concerns me as your friend is your own...
Hannah, may I have the floor?
You'll take it anyway.
Well, in the first place, this business about temperament blowing up. I never have thrown any scenes or done anything to interfere with the making of a picture. In the 9 pictures I've worked on, I've only had 2 arguments. And one of them was with a director who insisted that I play a sexy scene a la Mae West. And all I did was insist that I should play it a la me.
There's argument on your side.
And as for production schedules, the only time I ever held up work was once when I was crying, on the lunch hour, on my own time. And so they were all 10 minutes late because they had to fix my makeup.
Crying? You?
Sure. I don't even remember what it was now, but I'm not going to apologize for being a little intense or for taking my work seriously. That's what an actress does, doesn't she? She deals in human emotions.
Of course. But if you're this cooperative, I mean, if that's all the trouble you've ever caused anybody, then why this reputation of being a screwball?
Well, maybe because I am one. I come from Brooklyn, Hedda. Maybe I haven't always been as tactful as I should be, and maybe I am impulsive. But I won't just sit still and be shoved into the Hollywood pattern. An actress should be herself. Remember when we first met 3 years ago, I made the mistake of thinking I should paint on a mouse to look like Rita Hayworth or fix my hair up like Betty Grable, but I found out the audience doesn't want a carbon copy of anybody.
Shelley, you'll never be a carbon copy when it comes to looks. I've seen you in Technicolor, this new one from Universal International, Frenchy with Joel McRae. You're Shelley Winters, that's certain.
Well, it hasn't been easy to stay me. And now it's run the circle, I guess. You know, the other day, on my own lot, I heard a producer telling a poor girl that she was a Shelley Winters type.
I don't feel the least bit sorry for her.
Well, in a way, I do. But seriously, Hedda, it isn't just asserting your individuality that's important. It's being honest with yourself and trying to be honest with other people, and especially to be honest to your work.
I know underneath you're a pretty serious and ambitious girl, Shelley. You've taken courses at UCLA to learn more about other phases of your business. You spend your spare time down at the Circle Theater here, directing.
I just can't sit still. I don't want to be another...
You want to be Shelley Winters. You said that.
Of course I do, no matter what kind of a reputation I get.
Oh, think how that could be misquoted. I don't care about my reputation.
Hedda, I didn't say that. I didn't mean it that way.
Darling, maybe what you need is somebody to explain you to Hollywood.
Hedda, why do you think I was so anxious to come here?
And why do you think I asked you? Good night, Shelley. Well, there she goes, back to work on a new picture with John Garfield. He ran all the way. And from the head start she got here, I think she's going to win the race, too. Gypsy Rose Lee is back at her typewriter again, knocking out a play for baby sister June Havoc, titled Three to Make Ready. When a friend of Barry Wilson's told Hal Peary, she's a darling, but not the brightest girl in the world, Hal replied, Mary, to me, is about as naive as United States Steel. Florence Marley, who recently returned from Tokyo, where she made Tokyo File 212, had an audience with President Truman in Washington, D.C. 2 days ago and answered many questions about life in Japan. Which reminds me, Bob Hope mailed me a postcard from Tokyo which said, Dear Hedda, here I am in Tokyo, and everything here looks like it had been made in Japan. Last evening, I drove out to a beautiful, secluded Italian villa overlooking Beverly Hills. And that was the home of the human wolf with a British accent. Yes, that seems to be the way audiences think of James Mason, as a cruel, sinister man with dark, brooding looks and a tortured soul. A man of madness and moonlight. Well, the moon was out, as a matter of fact, when I arrived at the Mason's home. Oh, what in the name of...
Why, Hedda Hopper.
Oh, hello, Pamela.
For heaven's sake, don't you like cats?
Yes, the kind that proprietor of the fireside.
Well, we have that kind, too. Come on in, Hedda.
Am I interrupting, Pam? Were you working?
I was just beating out a couple of paragraphs on a new script.
The new script?
Yes. Couldn't resist the plug.
Oh, you don't have to with me. I read your first novel, Del Palma. I loved it.
Hypocrite. Come on. James is stretched out on the floor of the library.
Stretched out?
Oh, all right.
He's entertaining.
Well, I don't want to disturb him, Pamela. Who's he talking to?
The children's our header. He's entertaining Porky.
Oh.
I'll tell him you're here.
Oh, no, wait. Pamela, that's a perfect picture. James and Porky. Oh, she's the cutest baby I
am. You little fiend! These years I've spent on the moors, devoting my life to your welfare, your career, selling my soul for silver so that you, Jezebel, can laugh at me, call me a sentimental fool, so that you... No.
What in the name of...
All right, he's reading us some scripts, that's all. Trying out a new part for a picture. James says Portland's an inspired critic. Much better than I am.
That's why I tried it like this. So that you... What's the matter, Portland?
Well, she certainly has a mind of her own.
It's so hard for James to find good parts to see. They're sending her just...
Now, wait a minute, listen. As the camera pans towards Sir Roger, we see a huge close-up of his tortured face. He is like a man bereft of his reason as he strives. Isn't it a good script, Eva? Good part for Daddy? All right. It wasn't that bad. At least he said I was handsome. I did have five women crazy about me, even pursuing me. What's bad about having five women pursuing me? Oh, yes, of course. Well, I've thrown it away. Here's another one. This is the story of Jonathan Ellsworth, a moody, Svengali-type singing teacher whose beautiful young protege...
No, not exactly.
Thank you. Same thing all over again, isn't it? A couple more years like this and you'll never be able to explain me in kindergarten. But what type am I, Portland? There must be some way people could think of me besides as a weird guy from Insanity Lane who... Yes. Now, maybe this one. A movie scenario entitled The Man of Moonlight. You can't get away from it. You just don't like Daddy's script.
But don't you see how it is? I guess I'll get interrupt before there's any more.
You beautiful fowl. How charmingly sweet you sing. Oh, let us get married. Too long we have tarried, but what should we do for a ring?
What brought that on? What's going on?
I don't want you to miss this.
All right, Portland, all right. The script you like, Porty. The owl and the pussycat went to sea in a beautiful pea-green boat. I took some honey and plenty of money wrapped up in a 5-pound note. The owl looked up to the stars above and sang to a small guitar. Oh, lovely pussy. Oh, pussy, my love. What a beautiful pussy you are, you are, you are. What a beautiful pussy you are. Pussy said to the owl, you elegant fowl, how charmingly sweet you sing. Oh, let us be married. Too long we have tarried, but what shall we do for a ring? They sailed away for a year and a day to the land where the bong tree grows. And there in a wood a piggywig stood with a ring in the end of his nose, his nose, his nose, with a ring in the end of his nose. Dear pig, are you willing to sell for a shilling your ring? Said the piggy, I will. So they took it away and were married next day by the turkey who lives on the hill.
They dined on mince and slices of quince, which they ate with a runcible spoon. And hand in hand, on the edge of the sand, they danced by the light of the moon.
I'm like Porty. I like this typecasting for James Mason. Good night. Hedda, wait. No, I'll stop by another time.
Hedda Hopper, I didn't know you were so sentimental. I do believe you have mist in your eyes.
Who, me? Are you kidding?
No, but aren't you trying to?
Good night, Pamela. Tell James we enjoyed his performance.
No, I never did talk to James Mason that night. I didn't feel like interrupting the children's hour. Besides, I'd already discovered what I went there to find out. There's a James Mason that very few people know, and he's far more interesting to me than all the legends about him. George Ward, a 16-year-old lad from Charleston, South Carolina, back from Korea with an army discharge, dropped in here yesterday. He looked like a baby. Before the army discovered his true age, he'd been wounded and captured by the Reds twice. Once, he was one of 60 who went 6 days without food, four without water. Only 10 escaped alive. He walked 12 miles yesterday to the 20th Century Fox studio to see his favorite pin-up girl, June Haver, only to learn that she's in Rome. He heard Al Jolson sing in Korea. Said when Al arrived, their morale was in their boots, but when he left, they were up in the clouds. The first time I ever saw Al Jolson was at the old Winter Garden Theater in New York City. I don't remember the name of the play, but I do remember the name of a wonderful song, April Showers. I was young then and very romantic. And as that vibrant voice of his wafted over that audience like a caress, I thought of all the things that go with springtime and April showers. The first crocus pushing its way through the snow, wood violets, the first robin. And I've often wondered if Al wasn't thinking of these same things as he sang.
That moon in May, so if it's raining, my glory bears, because it is a raining rain, you'll know. It's raining. And when you see clouds upon the hills, you soon will see clouds of daffodils. So keep on looking for bluebirds and listen for his song.
Called, and rightly so, Mr. Show Business. In 50 years, no one ever took that title away from him. It would have been appropriate had Irving Berlin dedicated his famous song, There's No Business Like Show Business, to Al Jolson. We've had no one like him in this generation. In 1927, while doing a picture at the old Warner Brothers studio, we worked late one night, and Al Jolson came on the set and said, "Honey, I've signed to do the jazz singer, so I thought I'd just come around and learn something about screen acting."
California, here I come, right back where I started from, where flowers bloom in the sun. Before the sun set on the sun, everything the sun gives me says will be late. That's why I can hardly wait.
Most people think Jolson was the first choice for the jazz singer. As a matter of fact, he was fifth.
Georgie Jessel, Eddie Cantor, William Howard, and Bill Collier all turned it down. The silver screen was silent until Jolson made that picture, and it's never stopped singing since. Few people knew that Al feared tuberculosis and gave generously for many years to the Saranac Lake Hospital. During World War II, he just about circled the globe, singing for our soldiers in the most unbelievable places. And that trip cost him one lung. After war ended, there was a period in which his star seemed to wane until Sid Skolsky wrote the story of Al's life and titled it The Jolson Story. Warner's, which made a fortune from the jazz singer, turned it down, but Harry Cohen of Columbia accepted it. Then Jolson was taken seriously ill. Nobody except Al believed he'd live. One day, Harry Cohen paid Al a visit in his hospital room to tell him they couldn't make the picture after all. Jolson, with a mighty effort against his doctor's orders, got out of bed, put on the greatest performance of his life, and proved to Cohen he could not only sing as well as ever, but was even younger than ever. And when Cohen left, Al collapsed. But he recovered, the picture was made, and again all America thrilled to Jolson's great songs. Remember? When there are gray skies, I don't mind the gray skies. You make me blue, sunny boy. Friends may forsake me. Let them all forsake me. You'll pull me through, sunny boy. Then came the war in Korea. Al didn't wait to be invited to go. He just bought two tickets, one for himself and one for his accompanist, Harry Axt, got permission and flew to Tokyo. He was the first to sing for our men in Korea. When he returned, he said to me, "I've never been so tired in my whole life. I've never seen such filth, misery, or such gallant lads. They have such big hearts and not enough of anything else. Nor have I ever met a man as great as General Douglas MacArthur." Then he added, "If MacArthur goes, America goes." He said to me, "Heather, I want to sing on your radio show." And he was all set to do just that next Saturday night. Al Jolson's voice is now still. But here is our farewell to Mr. Show Business.
Thank you.
Goodbye, Al.
Next week, NBC will again bring you Hedda Hopper with another up-to-the-minute column about Hollywood, another exciting personality to argue on an intriguing subject, a singing visit with Betty Hutton, and a dramatic highlight with Joseph Cotten in the role he likes best.
Good night, everybody.
Make a date for next Saturday night for Hedda Hopper's Hollywood. From the ringside seat, the desk by the window, looking right down on Hollywood and Vine. The Hedda Hopper Show is an FMB production directed by Jill Faust and with music by Frank Worth. This is Harlow Wilcox bidding you good night.
Three chimes mean good times on NBC.